Welcome to the Edinburgh Fringe. On today's show, that rule of three, five theatre winners, and Emily Walsh. Yes, good afternoon, good morning, good evening. Did you enjoy your day off? If you are the half of the Fringe that went, oh, I don't want to do Monday, then welcome back to the Fringe. If you're listening every day in the podcast, welcome back to the podcast. And if you've just been keeping your nose to the grindstone of the arts and mills, we're still going. It's Tuesday at the Fringe. Yes, back going. Of course, not everybody takes Monday off their shows. They take the occasional day off as well. Some of them are also only doing the first 2 weeks. So Friday might be their last day. Some are only starting this week. So as always, do check your listings at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com for all the shows we mentioned here. Direct links into the ticket office as well. Or you can just go straight there, edfringe.com, and attempt to discover where their search box is. It's top right. I'll leave you to find out the rest. Okay, what are we going to do here? Well, finding things. Quick reminder, rule of three. Lots of people looking for recommendations online or Twitter, which is the sort of middle rule. As I've always said, if you're going to see three Fringe shows, here's the rule. The first one is go see somebody that you definitely know you like, that you're sure of, that is an absolute, definitely take it to the bank, that's going to happen. Second one is find a recommendation. It could be somebody you know. It could be somebody behind you in a queue that you're queuing at the half-price hut just off the Royal Mile, and just go, what do you like? What should I go and see? Listen to what other people like. As a whole, the Edinburgh crowd kind of works out what is and what isn't going. So just be part of that process. And the final one, of course, is always just get one of those printed Fringe guides. There are some out there. Spin it around, flick through the pages, stop and just stick your finger down on the name of a show. It's slightly harder to do that with the app. I wish they had a little random button on it. But there you go. There's your three. One you know you like, one somebody else likes, and one you have no idea about, and you'll get the best Fringe experience. Recommendations. Oh, let's give you some now, because the Fringe First Awards from the Scotsman have been announced. These are for theatre productions that are debuting up here at the Fringe. They tend to launch three tranches of the awards, one for week one for week two, one for week three. So over the weekend, the shows that picked up their first Fringe Firsts for 2023, England and Son, which plays at the Roundabout Summer Hall, Funeral, which plays at Zoo Southside, A Funeral for My Friend Who Is Still Alive, at the Space on Nidri Street, Two from the Traverse, the Grand Old Opera House Hotel, and Heaven. And finally, The Life and Times of Michael Kay, Jim Cutsey's show there at Assembly Hall. All of those very much worthy winners. They've now got the Fringe First Awards to put on every single bit of marketing and pitching that they will do coming out of Edinburgh going forward. There'll be more Fringe First. We'll pick up some more of the other awards as we get closer to the end of the Fringe as well. But for now, let's go over to the interview. Emily Walsh brings her show Dad Girl from the clubs of New York to the grass market of Edinburgh. Emily doesn't know if she wants children, but she would like to be a dad. It's a show about making decisions in a world where others believe the decision has already been made for you. Society decides, not you. How do you subvert and go against those expectations for what you want? The Fringe offers something that many comics, including Emily, rarely get. It's a chance to spend an hour with the audience that allows more complex topics to be addressed, to go into much greater depth, but also a chance to look at a wider picture. And that offer of more time, more depth, more complexity, more breadth is something that Emily is luxuriating in her show. It's at Just the Tonic on the Grass Market, 5:50 p.m. right through until the 27th of August. Joining me now on the Edinburgh Fringe, so another American who's come over to the Fringe. You would think the exchange rate is in America's favour, the way it's going right now. Emily Walsh joins us now. Hello, Emily.
Hello. Thanks for having me.
Welcome to the Fringe, your first time. What did you think you were letting yourself into?
I mean, honestly, it's such an interesting conversation because I have been to Edinburgh before, but not for the Fringe, just to visit, and I had just kind of fell in love with it as a place. And then I've always known about the Fringe from, you know, podcasts and comedians and artists talking about developing shows and being able to really stretch their legs artistically. And I think that that was kind of what I was looking for. You know, doing stand-up in New York City is an amazing experience, and I get to do a lot of shows and I get to have a lot of stage time and I get to have a lot of different types of audiences, but we do basically usually do shorter sets. You know, some of the longest sets I do here are 15 minutes. And you can't really get into some topics and some deeper things because you have to just kind of appease people and give them what they want on their date night and that sort of thing. And I've just been doing stand-up about a few different topics that my show kind of gets into that were just kind of tough for your everyday audience. And I said, you know, what if I had the opportunity to have people for an hour and they kind of knew what they were getting into and really see where that could go? And so I'm just really excited to kind of stretch my legs artistically and see what happens when I have the opportunity to do the show for a month.
So have you got a chance in New York then to practice the hour?
Yes. Yes. I've run it a few times and it's going well. And it's a lot of it is just doing it for having people for the full hour because the show gets into, you know, loss and grief and big questions like, you know, should I have a kid? What is the fertility like, et cetera, et cetera. And it's just tough to do that in 10 minutes when you're like, hey, how's it going? You know, Saturday night, what did you do when you lost a parent? You know, it's just not like a fun vibe. So it's been really, really great to kind of have the opportunity to really dig into some topics. And one of my big things, because I've always kind of done dark jokes and dark humor, is I never want to dig a hole that I don't have time to climb out of with the audience. I never want to go so dark that they leave not happy. And so having the hour to really explore topics has been really, really great so far. So I have been able to run it a few more times before I get over there. But yeah.
So there's that feeling of a duty of care to the audience in regards to the material then?
I think so. Yeah. Because, you know, the topics of my show are the reason I'm doing the show in general is that these jokes are the ones that people come up to me afterwards about. These jokes are the ones that people say, I related to you so much. I've been going through this exact moment. You know, the big question of the entire show is whether or not I should have a kid. That's kind of the underlying question the whole time. And I am 37. A lot of people, you know, they'll come up to me, they'll say, oh my gosh, I literally just canceled my appointment to get my eggs frozen, or I just had this conversation again, or it's a very relatable moment. And then the other half of the show is loss and growing up without my dad. And that is also like people just, those are the jokes people come up to me about. Those are the jokes that people say, oh my gosh, that's the thing. You know, I have a couple of the jokes on TikTok and I haven't posted a new one in months, but that's still the one that every day I wake up and a few more people have favorited it, you know, because if people want to use humor to get through loss, then they love it. It's funny because anyone who has experienced something like that, they're the people who like the jokes. The only people who think the material is too dark are people who haven't lost somebody young and they think it's inappropriate. They think it's, you know, whatever, but people who have gone through something similar are the ones laughing and they're the ones saying, oh, I really needed this laugh and thank you for that. And so part of the reason I wanted to do the show in general is just that these are the topics that people just kept telling me were my relatable topics and they're what I'm going through right now and they're what I'm passionate about talking about. So, but yeah, it is a level of care that I want to have for people and just say, you know, I want you to think and I want you to experience what I'm trying to explain, but I also want you to leave and go to dinner and have a nice night. You know, like I don't want to be a downer on your day. And I'm also not a downer of a person and I'm not a generally sad person. There's just some stuff that I want to discuss with people and I feel like I don't always get the forum to.
With the longer show then, does that mean that you can take people into, I'm going to use the word a deeper emotional place, but in a sort of complexity level. Do you take people to a deeper place than the 15-minute set? Or you can stay at that relatively deep level longer.
It's deeper, and it is, I wouldn't say it's necessarily longer because it's intermixed. I really try to pepper in some light stuff. So it's not a heavy, I mean, it is a heavy show, but it's not a depressing show. It's not like a, oh my God, this is the artist truth kind of show. It's just that, are there tough topics? And I kind of say a few times, you know, if the first few dark jokes don't work, I'm like, oh, well, it's going to get a lot darker before it gets brighter. You know, like these are the things that I am talking about. And, you know, it is a little bit deeper and darker, but it is just the opportunity. You know, you can't do in a quick set a joke about how you think you're the reason that you thought your dad was in purgatory because you convinced him to skip church the day he died. You know, that's not like a fun, light chit chat, but it is funny to me that is, you know, my child brain was picturing my dad in an elevator lobby waiting to go up to heaven. You know, it's just like, I think that there can be joy found in that and in the discussion. And I do think it's relatable that a lot of people, if they go through tough things as a kid, maybe they're not being talked to. I know that now we send kids to therapy and that's amazing. But in the 90s, we kind of just said, oh, you'll be fine. And I think that that's just a very relatable thing that a lot of people haven't thought about in a while. And the few times I have done the show, I have had older people as well come talk to me and be like, you know, that made me think of my parents in a way I haven't thought about in years or whatever it is. You know, I think it's just kind of, I'm trying to share my perspective as transparently as possible and my experience. And it just takes a little bit longer than 15 minutes, I guess.
And we've talked there quite a bit about the loss side of the show, but there's also, as you said, right at the top, the idea of, do I want to become a parent? So there's a flip side here as well. And it almost feels like you're sort
yes.
of mirror, you're mirroring the young and the old in the side of the argument.
Yeah, and it's like, can I be a parent when I didn't have an ideal parent situation, basically? And a lot of the jokes, too, are about gender and identity and all that sort of stuff, because I do, if I were to parent, I would identify as the dad for all the silly reasons and all the real reasons of, you know, I want to be there for the first beer. I'm not that great openly and emotionally. I want to just tousle the hair and say, you know, get out there, scamp. And so it's kind of I keep saying the question is, can you be a dad if you grew up without one? And so it is just like the question of, you know, as a married woman, as a person who got married, the second I got married, everyone's question was, well, when are you going to have a kid? When is it happening? When is it happening? When is it happening? And it's such an intense topic that we take so lightly in polite, like, you know, you go to a barbecue with people you don't know and they're like, when are you having a baby? And it's like, I don't know, when are you having a colonoscopy? What are we doing here? Like, I just think it's a weird thing that we're so intense about with any woman, just what, when are you going to fulfill your destiny as a parent? And is that my destiny? I don't know. And so I think it's just kind of a moment in time that a lot of people experience, and specifically women experience, of just, you know, we were sold this bill of goods growing up that you can be whatever you want. But if you're too late on being a parent, did you do what you were supposed to? You know, did you check all the boxes if you don't have a kid? And I just think it's a really relatable thing in this moment of it's not automatic anymore. You don't automatically do it. And so there's a lot of wondering of whether or not that's the right choice.
This is one of those times where I have a great question, but it's a question. The pressure to have a baby is not something that applies to me, but applies sure. much more to you from society. You know, if I, you yeah. know, I am a father, but if I hadn't been a father, it would be, oh, you're not a father. I get a free pass on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And doing comedy is a really interesting experience because I know plenty of male comics and I'll know them tangentially for years and not know their fathers. And then they'll drop in conversation. Oh, well, the kids and I, and I'll say, you have kids, you know, because they're able to navigate the world however they see it and just kind of do shows 5 nights a week. They've expected their wives or their whoever to take care of the kid. And no one's questioning, well, how are you out? How are you doing this? But I know that every mom comedian I know has people ask them, well, who's watching the kids tonight? And how many nights do you do this? And are your kids missing you? And are they upset? And all that sort of thing. And it's like, well, no one's really, you know, part of the issue for me when we started talking about it is just like, okay, but we all need to, I want more acknowledgement for the fact that if I had a kid right now, I'd have to take time off of my career, time off of my goals, time away from the stage, time away from developing as an artist. And everyone just thinks that that is automatically what should happen. There's not even a discussion, you know? And it's just this frustration with being assumed that you should be a parent, the pressure to be a parent, and then the pressure to not feel frustrated by the time that that would take. I felt like no one was really listening when I said, well, I don't want to do that this moment, you know, and can't we take a moment to value the momentum in my career, or just that I want to spend my time a certain way right now? No, we can't talk about that because you just got married. So we have to talk about whether or not you're going to have a kid. So it's just kind of all the pressures and all the expectations. And also it's just one of those things where if you are at that barbecue and you don't know people well, that's the first thing they think to break the ice. And why is that the first icebreaker? Why is that the first thing? Why can't you say, you know, well, what do you like to do on the weekends? Or what's the last book you read? Why is it always, well, when are you having a kid? I don't know. It's just such a thing that's so heavy on my mind right now that's kind of where the jokes came from. And then once the jokes happened, that's when people started telling me how relatable it was. And that's when the show was born, you know?
And we have a 15-minute interview here, and we can't go deep in it. And you have a one-hour show. And I can already feel that this is a topic that I would just... Yeah, we could run a one-hour podcast here, but it's The Fringe. Time is tight for me. And I realize that we're now 11 minutes in, and we haven't even mentioned the show title yet.
Yes, Dad Girl is the show title. If you're looking for it in the program, it's Emily Walsh, Dad Girl. But... yeah, it's kind of a play on, a lot of people say girl dad, you know, if you're the, like when dads have a girl, they're like, oh, I'm a girl dad. So, you know, my dad was a girl dad and can I be the dad as a girl? It's just kind of that kind of play on words. But yeah, I am Dad Girl, I guess.
And of course, it's a topic where the words are such a simplification because, you know, those words imply it's mom and dad. It's not dad and dad, or mom and mom, or mom, dad, and grandfather.
Exactly, yeah. Just it implies a binary and a very standard situation that may not work for everybody.
And the world is far from binary, and all the better for it. Now, other projects. The other podcast that I've got, I think it's almost tangential that you've got for me. The idea of being alone and how that makes people feel. This is your podcast outside of The Fringe that you do.
Yes. Alone at Lunch is the podcast. And we talk to a different person every week about a time they felt like the odd one out.
And there's almost like echoes of that in your Fringe show as well.
Oh, 100%. I think that I felt isolated in a lot of ways. And that's why I started the podcast to begin with. And that's why I started with comedians, is so many comedians have had a weird time in their lives where they felt like isolated or strange or for whatever reason weird, and that's why they started comedy. So it's kind of a fun chat of a lot of origin stories of people becoming comedians and a lot of, you know, fun nostalgia because a lot of people felt isolated in junior high and high school. So we get into some silly chats about that. But I think we've had a really great range of guests so far. We just keep going with people. And it's a very, we get into some really relatable stuff. Everyone has felt alone at some point.
That podcast, details in The Fringe, details in the rest of your gigs, all at your website.
Everything is at emilywalshcomic.com. And you can find me on every platform that exists at The Funny Walsh, W-A-L-S-H.
I love the way you've covered that just in case a social network suddenly explodes and disappears while we're in Edinburgh. Thank you for
you
that in terms
know,
of the editing. Emily, great to chat with you. And thanks for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me.
Emily Walsh there with the show Dad Girl, playing at the Grass Market in the Just the Tonic Centre there, 5:50 p.m. through until the 27th of August. Thanks very much for your ears once more. A little slice of the fringe, 3,500 shows. We can get some of them in here. Go out, find your favourites, find other people's favourites, find really special ones. And when you do, link, like, love, share, and subscribe to the people you see on stage. And if you want to do that for the podcast here as well, very much appreciated. And those star ratings don't create themselves in the likes of iTunes, Apple Podcasts, Google, and Spotify. So if you want to throw one in there and feel like a real fringe reviewer, go ahead, knock yourself out. I'll be back again tomorrow, Ewan Spence, going around the streets of Edinburgh to find you the interviews, the people, the news, the stories, and all the fun of the fringe here in the podcast. For now, ta-ra. You've been listening to the Edinburgh Fringe Show, hosted by Ewan Spence, produced by The Podcast Corner. Listen to more from The Fringe at edinburghfringe.thepodcastcorner.com.